record profits at Amazon, but it's not just from delivering those brown boxes.
Bottom line got a big boost in the first quarter from its cloud computing unit and burgeoning advertising business.
Plus, a clue about the health of the U.S. economy comes out later today.
Economic growth was likely pretty solid in the first 3 months of the year, and that is despite a really difficult start to the year.
And China vows a new direction for its controversial Belt and Road Initiative. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story this morning, a significant shift in China's foreign policy ambitions, here's what you missed. Amazon reported record quarterly profits after the bell yesterday. But interestingly, the main driver of the blowout quarter wasn't its core delivery business. Yori Ko has more from San Francisco.
The e-commerce company's bottom line got a big boost in the first quarter from its cloud computing unit and burgeoning advertising business, helping to offset sluggish growth from the core online retail business. The profit more than doubled to well above what analysts were expecting. Even so, lackluster retail sales overseas and a flat performance from its Whole Foods grocery chain dragged down revenue growth for a fourth straight quarter.
Amazon also said costs could increase down the line as it tries to decrease delivery times for Prime customers from 2 days to just 1 day. And Uber has once more lowered its target initial valuation before it makes its public market debut in May. The company had initially hoped to be valued at $120 billion. It was then lowered to $100 billion, and now Uber is saying between $80 and $90 billion should do just fine. The decline is as a result of concerns about the share performance of competitor Lyft. However, even at a lower valuation, Uber's IPO would still be the second biggest public market debut in history, just behind Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba. And Renault is planning to propose a merger with Nissan. It's already a partner in an alliance that's been strained by the departure and imprisonment of the former chief executive, Carlos Ghosn. Under the proposal, shareholders would receive a 50% stake in each of the two companies. Our reporting suggests that Nissan has not yet been informed of the specifics of Renault's plans and that there were still many options under discussion. Now, our big story this morning, China's new direction. It has to do with President Xi Jinping's signature foreign policy. It's known as the Belt and Road Initiative. The policy had come under fire for unnecessarily loading up poor countries with debt. At a speech this morning, Mr. Xi vowed a strategy shift. James Areti is at the conference in Beijing. So, James, what were we expecting from this second summit of the Belt and Road Initiative?
The second summit of the Belt and Road Initiative is providing an opportunity for Xi Jinping to address many of the global critics that the program has developed. Much of the world has been looking at Xi Jinping's development program of ports and roads and highways and bridges, and seeing how it has been increasing debt in some of the poorer countries of the world and countries with much smaller economies than China. And so we were looking for some indication from the president of China that there's a recognition of the debt that has been going along with the programs that they've been building, the projects that they've been building around the world, and some understanding that China needs to do more to do things like increase its imports from some of the countries that it's tying into the Belt and Road.
What did Xi Jinping have to say about the criticisms?
Xi Jinping, in discussing the Belt and Road this year, did some very notable things. One of the biggest would be that he didn't mention any financial figures. He mentioned nothing about money. And the strong suggestion is that the Belt and Road is about more than money, that they're looking for interconnected global trade networks in ways that don't necessarily increase countries' debts, that would allow countries to trade with China and with each other in ways that will be good for the global economy and good for those countries.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of the countries who might have been burdened by what some have called too much debt as a result of this initiative?
In Asia, a notable one would be Pakistan. That's probably the biggest project, a group of projects that China has in the Belt and Road. They've had lots of financial stress in Pakistan because of these projects. Of course, that country and many of the others that are facing financial stress had problems before China started building some of these projects. But the amounts of money are so immense coming from China in the form of loans that it's increased pressure on such countries.
Why is China engaging in this program? What's the overall goal of Belt and Road?
One of the interesting things about the Belt and Road is how it's not very clearly defined. This is something that's put forward by Xi Jinping early in his tenure. And because he has personally grown so powerful, this program has just taken on a huge amount of significance. And it almost represents China's international policy writ large. Because it's so all-encompassing, because so much money has been involved, and it's become very controversial, it's just become something that is sort of defining Xi Jinping's international steps.
I can guess the answer to this, but what does the U.S. think of the Belt and Road Initiative?
The U.S. has been a gigantic critic of the Belt and Road program. The U.S. completely snubbed this meeting. It's not clear that anyone, even from the U.S. Embassy in China, has attended, even though Xi Jinping was able to get more than three dozen leaders of countries. And even if countries didn't send their leader, they would typically send a top trade person or at minimum the ambassador. The U.S. doesn't seem to be here at all.
That's James A. Reddy from the second summit of the Belt and Road Initiative in Beijing. You can find all of our coverage of U.S.-China relations at WSJ.com. On to markets. Just a day after merger talks were called off with its rival Commerce Bank, Germany's Deutsche Bank reported earnings this morning. The German bank cut its revenue forecast for the year to essentially flat. I managed to grab our very busy European finance reporter, Jenny Strasberg, before their earnings call. So, Jenny, what's the reaction been?
Well, the shares are down about 3%. That's probably on the bank cutting their revenue forecast for the year. They're saying probably flat revenues compared to a previous anticipated slight increase. Look, I mean, the deal talks with Commerce Bank didn't turn into a merger. And now I think investors want to hear what is the so-called plan B. Like, I don't think they're going to be happy with Deutsche Bank just going back to how it looked before it went into merger talks. So, you know, they're going to be looking for some reason to be hopeful that the bank is going to deliver on its targets and, you know, stabilize.
And now the sked. Here's what to look forward to later today. We'll get the first inkling of how the U.S. economy did in the first 3 months of this year when GDP figures are released at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. After a tumultuous end to 2018, well, things are looking up. From Washington, Harriet Torrey has more on what we can expect.
U.S. economic growth was likely pretty solid in the first 3 months of the year, and that is despite a really difficult start to the year. If we're looking back a few months, we had the government shutdown, which dragged all the way through to late January. There was a polar vortex. There was also some very serious financial market turmoil in late 2018. So things really started off on a bad footing, but over the past couple of weeks, data that's come in has suggested that the economy actually was pretty solid in the first quarter. That's largely for two reasons. One is exports. It looks like Americans managed to export more. That's partly because imports were down, because imports were pretty high in the fourth quarter of last year. This is all related to China trade tensions and companies trying to get ahead of expected tariff increases. The other point that should be more or less solid was consumer spending.
And in more IPO news, we're expecting that the office messaging app Slack will publicly release its S1 today. That's the form that will give investors the first real sense of how the company's doing. If you remember, Slack is headed to market in a non-traditional way. Like Spotify, it's chosen to list its shares directly. That means the company won't raise any additional capital, and also that it won't have to pay bankers to help figure out the right asking price. The company is currently valued at around $7 billion. Plus, thanks to those of you who wrote in about yesterday's question on payment app Venmo. Philip Shirk said that he thought Venmo had been successful in attracting 40 million users, not just because of the social features, but also because you need just a debit card, not a bank account, to set up the app. That makes it easier, he says, for his friends to use Venmo. Thanks for writing in. Finally, today's question. Yesterday, we broke the news that Joe Biden, the former vice president, would be seeking the Democratic nomination for president. What did you think of his launch video? Did you watch it? Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.